thank Dale Thorensen for pulling this session together. It must have been a lot of work to do all this. And boy, it's been a real good, informative session. I've learned a lot this morning. I'm going to tell you a quick story about a little bit of work we've been doing with winter canola in Montana. I'm going to ask that question. Jeff Holmes is my research associate, been helping me with that, doing most of the field work. Yeah, but first, I wanted to show you what the oilseed production situation looks like in Montana right now. That's 1998 through 2009, and that's the sum of all the oilseed crops that we grow in Montana. Canola's in the yellow. So there was, you know, a time when we grew a little bit of canola, but it's just about disappeared. And I guess I'm interested in asking this question. I'm a no-till cropping systems agronomist primarily, and I'm looking a lot for diversification in the systems that I work with. And we'd love to have an oil seed that worked in tandem with our wheat. And right now, there just really isn't anything that's jumping to the forefront. So the justification for winter canola, which is kind of why we're looking at this, is it's got a better growth habit relative to our weather that we would typically receive in Montana. We don't really have the Mediterranean winter, you know, moisture climate that they have in the Pacific Northwest, but we're close to that. We're somewhere between that and in a summer rainfall environment. Those two pictures, see if I can get the mouse to work here. There we go. This you know, picture was taken June 8th. This is not too far from Bozeman. That winter canola field's in full flower. Here's a, you know, for illustration, another field 10 days later out in central Montana, just starting to flower. We're going to hit heat and drought every year in Montana, except for this. But say 9 out of 10 years, we're going to hit heat and drought in about 10 days from now. And so this field is going to be a lot better positioned than this one to actually make yield. It's that simple, I guess. But the key challenge for us as we've been playing with this to actually get it to emerge and grow enough in the fall to get it to survive. This is actually a farm field here, and in that particular field, he had some issues related to nutrition, but so it left some holes in the stand. But he actually had a yield monitor running over that field at 0 to 100 bushels to the acre. And this particular grower wanted to try this crop again this year, but was in touch with Monsanto trying to get seed, and for whatever reason they would not give him the seed this year, so he was a little disappointed. We did try some commercial on-farm sites in Montana. You see where the mountains are here in the left. There's always a little delay with his mouth. We've got mountains here, but on these Rocky Mountain foothill environments where winter wheat is really stable, really secure as a crop, and it always survives the winter, that's the areas we're looking at winter canola. We did work with some growers down in this region. There was another grower up in this region with some commercial trials. The ones down in the south, we had to go with fall irrigation, and I'll explain that more in a minute, but we had six farms down in southwestern Montana, all with that DKW 1386 Roundup Ready variety. Five out of six stand failures for various reasons. I mean, not even close. The one was that fellow that did the 0 to 100 bushels an acre, depending where he was in the field. But most were willing to try again. So they weren't, they felt like they learned something. We made some mistakes with various things. And I guess that's what brings us to this plot study. Did it over two different crop sequences, two-year sequences. For context, it was no-till in spring wheat stubble. We use a low disturbance disc seeder, and I've learned a lot this morning about why we're having the trouble we're having in that wheat stubble. We try to go with fairly light wheat stubble, but still we're having some problems getting it to survive in that wheat stubble. Wanted to look at two seeding dates. Early September, for a lot of practical reasons, is about as early as we could possibly go in our area. You know, we couldn't reasonably, I won't get into the details, but that's about as early as we could possibly go in a recrop setting on wheat stubble, and then a delay of 3 weeks. Did fall irrigation only to simulate a single rainfall event. Let's say we got some rain in the fall, like we did this year for the first year in 12 years. Then I want to know whether that would actually help us get the crop through. Three cultivars, 2 to 5 seeding rates. I would one particular cultivar there that we stretched out over 5 different seeding rates. You know, pictures tell the story here. If we seed September 8th, these pictures were taken the following April 24th versus September 29th. I mean, there's no comparison. Early seeding is absolutely critical in our northern short fall environment. You know, that's what it looked like a month later, May 30th. I mean, there's just no plot there on the late seeding date versus a pretty nice stand if we get it in on time. And there's just to bring the data for both years, that's just comparing that early September versus the three-week delay in both years. You notice for 2009, there isn't even a red bar for the delayed seeding. There were 14 plants total in the entire trial that survived. I was able to go out and count them pretty quickly. What it looks like is we've got to hit a growing degree days using a zero C base of somewhere over 400 units. And that has to happen, obviously, after the crop emerges. So we need moisture to get it started, and then we need enough heat to get that move through to that stage, somewhere to the five-leaf stage, prior to late October. Our growing season pretty much shut down by October 27th this year. Things are pretty cold now. As far as that was the seeding date effect. If I simulate a fall rainfall event, we had a line source gradient from irrigation going from rain fed on the left, where you see that, you know, very very sparse plant population, to an increasing gradient to the right, made quite a difference for survival. Again, it was just a one-time rainfall event or irrigation event at the early seeding date, so we sort of biased against the late seeding date in that respect. But you can see the bars there are no water, a mid-range of water and a high water, and it's just pointing out again that we need to be able to start it on time and have it develop to a healthy seedling prior to getting into the winter period, because we don't irrigate beyond that point. I've got this in megagrams per hectare, but about each one of those units, that one, two, three, every one of those is about 20 bushels to the acre, if you're trying to figure out what that means in terms that are more familiar to you. We have hit as high as 90 bushels to the acre if we get everything right in this trial. So the first time I got excited about winter canola actually was seeing a presentation by Don Wysocki where he did 100 bushels to the acre at Oregon, and I thought, wow, I mean, that would be a game changer. If we can get canola at those kind of yield potentials, that's going to draw some grower interest. This is just a photo from this year. We actually did get some rain in the fall this year. Our normal rainfall for September is 1.6 inches. Haven't seen it since this is my 12th year, and that's the first time we've even come close to getting it. And better yet, we got it all in the first half of September. So we did get things started on time. But you can see those canola seedlings in that wheat stubble. That's in spring wheat stubble, so that's not as heavy a stubble as we can tangle with. We often get that crown positioned above that layer of wheat stubble, which really makes us vulnerable to freezing damage. So even though I've got the rain on time this year, I'd feel a lot better about it. We've got a variety trial, if Mike's in the room, we've got the variety trial in some bare ground, so that should survive quite well there. But where we've got this wheat stubble and this rotation study, I'm a little concerned about how that's going to survive. Canola variety, you know, we had some different varieties running in there. It mattered a little bit. It looked like earlier flowering was probably more helpful to us. We ran a different set in 2007 versus 2009. We actually had a non-Roundup ready one there in 2007, but weed management just proved problematic. When you get these thin, patchy stands, you've got to have a herbicide-tolerant variety to manage that. So I'll say variety mattered, but less than this than that timely fall growth. In terms of the seeding rate, those were the five seeding rates that we had, and those are number of seeds per meter squared, so divide those by 10 to get the square foot. And that's what the plots look like for that one variety. That's a month after planting. You know, there was a bit of a relationship relative to plant density and what our final yield was. R squareds of 0.4 to 0.5, so moderate there. And you'll see that even at those maximum seed numbers, we're probably only getting about half the number of plants compared to the number of seeds that we planted. We typically lose about half our stand over the winter. So when I do get a chance to visit with a grower about this, we try to encourage them to boost that seeding rate by at least 50%, if not double it, for what they would do relative to their spring canola. So seeding rate was critical, for probably more critical for uniform timely ripening, and I'm going really more off that grower experience. The ability of canola plants to compensate has been mentioned a couple times already today is just absolutely amazing at these low plant densities. So just quickly, I'm gonna, you know, I had four components in that study. One conclusion for each: early September seeding was critical. Fall irrigation was less risky than rain fed, you know, if we can get that. So right now, if I'm talking to growers, I'm really just going to encourage people who have the ability to irrigate once in the fall. I don't want them guessing on how much rain they would get. Varieties mattered less. Earlier flowering was good. Some questions, though. And these are kind of five questions where I'm at with winter canola in Montana. I'd like to know, what is that minimum rainfall event or pattern that would make a dryland production event successful? If I get a quarter of an inch of rain in early September and just enough to get the plant started, and I could imagine a lot of situations where unless you get enough rainfall early enough, you're really not going to make a viable stand. And so if it's limited only to irrigated production, that really limits its potential application. This wheat stubble that I've been the easiest or most logical place for us to think about this is in rotation with wheat, but it looks like that's probably the very worst stubble that we could be trying to grow this crop in. So, I'm interested in the work out of Idaho with that earlier establishment in a fallow period. I think that could be a game changer for us. I was interested in some of the deep furrow techniques, because it looks like if we can create a microclimate of some sort, we actually get better survival even with the absence of no-till. How can farmers obtain seed to experiment? I mean, we've got guys that want to try this, but if I've got companies that won't provide the seed, then that really, really limits it. So if there's anybody here from Monsanto in the room, I'd like to visit with you about that. More winter hardy types, better genetics. That prostrate ground hugging growth habit is really an important aspect for us. So does it fit? I would say yes, with a qualified answer. And that should have left some time for questions. I ran through that pretty quick. Okay, not as much time as I thought. Dick?
Perry, my question to you is, we had 14 plants around, did you save those plants?
I did not, and you're a breeder, so there shouldn't be much variance there. So I thought about it, but I did not. And some of them, there's environmental effects there as to why they survived. Yes, they were. Yeah. There we go. Yeah. Question in the back, Don.
Now my question is this thing on stubble. For a lot of crops, that stubble is beneficial, and so I've observed the same thing you have and a number of other people have in here. What's going on there? It can't be a temperature thing, or is it?
Well, I when I look at the sun angles in that in those seedlings trying to grow in that wheat stubble this time of year, you compare that to where they might be growing on the edge of the plot. I mean, those canola seedlings are just trying to stretch out a little bit. That crown development, and I forget who it was. I think the very, very first speaker this morning showed some great illustrations of how stubble can cause that crown to elongate, and that I think that's what's happening, especially when it sets up on top of that wheat stubble. I mean, you've got no insulation value from that soil at all. Yeah.
Directly correlated.
Yeah. Okay. Doug?
Have you looked at various owners, for example, like Perry Grove or maybe something along that lines, just to get that straw removal out of
there? I'm sure. Good question. I'm sure there are some engineering solutions that would actually clear some of that trash out of the way. It would help. Yeah.
Just like to make a comment, the waste straw, 2,4-D and the hormone herbicides were purified from waste straw residue 60 and 70 years ago. And I believe that there's some decomposition products coming out of this waste straw and killing the winter canola. I think there's a lot of that going on, in addition to the crown position.
Huh, okay.
Thanks, Greg.
Thank you.